Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy. Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I am good, buoyed up by a long weekend here in the UK. First of three long weekends in May, because May is always like that, but with the additional long weekend of the King getting his crown next week, which, you know, good for him, I guess. Today, I am going to start with a success of the week and a weird dilemma of the week. And then I am moving on to 23 de-hoarding projects you can do in a weekend. Obviously not all of them, although, you know, if you want to try, go for it. But it will give you some ideas, hopefully. And then we have an excellent top tip. So, success of the week isn't a specific incident. It's more of, well, it's basically that I have been doing well at being more consistent, at kind of building de-hoarding into my days rather than having to set aside specific time to blitz or even just do anything. Blitz may be overstating the effort. I've been doing better at like, oh, well, while I'm in here, I may as well do that. Or while I've got 10 minutes, I could scroll TikTok, or equally, I could just sort this little pile out here. And I feel like with not only the de-hoarding process, but should I ever get to a stage where it mainly just needs maintenance, I feel like that kind of building it into your daily life and being consistent is more important than the ability to throw everything into it once in a while. So it's something I've been trying to improve on for years. And so I'm quite pleased with myself that I have been doing some most days. So that is my success of the week. My weird dilemma of the week, in one of those incidents of trying, you know, just doing bits as and when, I came across a box, the box that my external hard drive came in. I have an external hard drive to back up my computer periodically. Seems like a fairly sensible thing to do. And I thought, why did I keep the box? And within that question was, does that mean I should continue to keep it? Like, was there a good reason to keep it? Or did I just keep it because I don't throw things away? And so when I picked the box up, it rattled. And I thought, that'll be why I've kept it. There's something I need in there. And what was actually in there was an international adapter for the plug for the external hard drive. So if I go to Europe, I'll be able to plug it in. And I thought, oh, I should probably keep that. I should probably keep that, because that's always my thought. It's always my first thought anyway. And then I thought, why should I probably keep that? The adapter is specific to that plug. It's not a general international adapter. It's specific to the plug for my external hard drive. And 2 points were pretty important. One, I haven't been abroad for a really long time. I try and avoid flights because I feel like they're killing the world. And going to Europe by train or whatever is quite a trek. And we've got some lovely places in the UK. And so I'm not saying I'll never go abroad again, but the reality is I haven't been abroad for years and I have no immediate plans to do so. But the second point, and probably more important even than that, is that even if I was going abroad, I wouldn't be taking my external hard drive with me. The thought that I'm in Paris or Rome and I would go, oh, better back up the laptop. I don't know. It's such a bizarre idea that that is a device I would need on holiday. So the good news is that the international adapter for the plug of my external hard drive, and indeed the box the external hard drive came in, are in the bin. So one of the things I've been managing to do a bit better lately is do more de-hoarding activities at weekends, particularly on Sundays. I didn't this Sunday, but for my last few weeks on Sundays, I found that quite a nice day to get on with some de-hoarding activities in a kind of gentle but persistent way. And I thought it would be a good opportunity to get together some ideas for different de-hoarding projects that you and I can do on weekends. And now, when I say on weekends, that's not to say that these can only be done on weekends. It's not to say that it has to strictly be done like that. Not everybody's weekend will be the same. You might do shift work. You might work in a restaurant and are busier at weekends than in the week. You might have kids with you at the weekend and not in the week. So I fully appreciate that when I say weekend, that doesn't work for everybody. But basically, the idea behind it is suggestions of small-ish but significant things you can achieve and give yourself a huge pat on the back by Monday morning. And if for you weekend means something different, then maybe, you know, maybe these are tasks you can do on a Tuesday. None of it is set in stone. In planning it, I've tried really hard to resist being like some of those decluttering programs that are very prescriptive and very like, on Monday morning you do this, on Tuesday afternoon you do this, because they assume that we've all got the same lives. They assume that we've all got the same stuff. You know, if on Thursday afternoons we're meant to do the garage, I don't have a garage. What do I do then? So I resist being like that. And I have done throughout this list. And so when I call it the weekend, it's for when suits you. And because all of our homes are different, some will not be a good fit for you, some of my ideas, but let it spark ideas for you. So if I suggest doing a particular room and you don't have that room, or that room is fine for you, or that room is too terrifying to approach for you, just think, well, okay, I can't do that, but how could I apply that to my home? How could I apply that to my plan? Now, the other thing about these ideas is some might take an hour or two, some might take the whole weekend, but see what feels doable to you and which speaks to you. Because for hoarders, these will almost certainly be bigger tasks than they would be for people with more average amounts of clutter, which is why some of these may be a full weekend task for you compared to an hour-long task for somebody else. So base it on what feels like a priority for you, what I think is important is not the same as what you think is important. And you will invariably be more motivated by the things that you feel are important. I like this idea of specific tasks. I think that completing a task can be really fulfilling, especially when you hoard and you are used to having to do an awful lot of work with very little signs of progress because it's such a big job. So completing a specific task can really boost your confidence and make you feel like you're making progress, keep you motivated, as opposed to like doing another 4 hours in that room where you feel like you're barely making a dent. So without further ado, 23 dehoarding tasks you can achieve in a weekend. Number one, your cutlery drawer. Now, this is inspired by my weekend's task. I realized I was, when I washed cutlery, I was starting to feel a bit icked out by putting clean cutlery back into my cutlery drawer because it had been so long since that drawer had had a good clean. I worried that I was putting clean into dirty. And I'm not normally an advocate for the kind of empty everything out and work from there approach. I think it more often leaves us in a worse position than when we started. But I figured a single drawer in the kitchen would be manageable. So what I did was I got everything out of the cutlery drawer, and importantly, I put it into the sink. Because, well, a couple of reasons. One is that I knew that a good chunk of it needed to be washed, or I wanted to wash it, whether it needed it or not. But also, I felt it was important it was in a contained place. I didn't want to just empty it out onto the floor. I know myself too well for that. And also, if it was in the sink, then it would vaguely be getting in my way all the time until I'd sorted it out. So it would be a slight annoyance until I'd completed the task. So that was my reasoning for that. So I took everything out of the cutlery drawer, put it into the sink, and then I washed the container bit that you put the knives and forks and spoons in, and put that back into the clean drawer. And then from there, washed everything I wanted to keep, and then put it back in one by one into the cutlery drawer. Now, I hate washing up. That is an important thing to note. And so the other bonus that I hadn't really anticipated of having to wash everything before I put it back in the sink or not, was I was a little bit more able to get rid of things because I was partly thinking, well, if I keep this, I have to wash it, and that's more washing up, and I hate it. So I now have a clean cutlery drawer, and everything in there I know has been washed recently. And there is also less in there. I very rarely peel vegetables, for instance. Even if I'm having like potatoes or carrots, I tend to scrub them rather than peel them. So I very rarely peel things. And so when I realized I had two potato peelers, it was a fairly easy decision to just throw one of them away. It wasn't worth donating. It was a bit rusty and old, so I threw away a potato peeler. There were other things I realized I had excess amounts of, like wooden spoons. And so now my kitchen drawer is clean. It is neater. I can find things more easily. And there is less stuff in there that I just know I never use. So that is idea number one. Number two, bathroom shelves. Now, this is the kind of thing where you may think, I don't have shelves in my bathroom. In which case, I'm talking about the space on the side of your sink. Essentially, I'm talking about the bottles of shampoo and conditioner and face cream and bags of cotton wool balls and empty toothpaste tubes, all of that stuff, wherever that's kept in your bathroom. And it's a good place to try and tackle because if you're anything like me, you've got 87 half bottles of shampoo because you lose interest in one quite quickly, or you don't love it, so you switch to a different one, or you've got all your old makeup or all of that stuff. And it's a really good project for a weekend, because it may be that this is a huge project for you that will take an entire weekend. It may be that it'll take a couple of hours. But one place to start is, if there is a bottle or a packet of something that you always avoid because you prefer a different one. If you don't love that brand of shampoo, so that one always ends up at the back of the shelf, get rid of it. If you have makeup that you never wear because it's not quite the right shade, get rid of it. If you've got bottles or packets of things that are unopened, they can be donated to a charity shop or somewhere like a homeless shelter, somewhere where people can use it. If something has been opened, it's not very respectful to expect somebody else to want to use it. So if it's been opened, it can only really go in the bin. But if it is sealed, feel free to donate it. But with the bathroom shelves, try and be ruthless. Try and be ruthless with all of these ideas. The stuff that's at the back is often the stuff you don't use, and you often don't use it because you don't love it. So let it go. Task number 3, the gross stuff at the back of the fridge, or the front of the fridge, or in the fridge door, wherever the gross stuff is in your fridge. If it's gone off, throw it out. If it's past its date, throw it out. If it's in a tub and it's been there so long that you're not even quite sure what it is, throw it out. If the whole fridge is too much, I have seen American fridges on TV and they are vast. If that's the case, just do one shelf, or just do the door or the kind of condiments in the door. Check the dates and get rid of the out of date ones. Think how amazing it will be to have an easy space next time you have fresh food to put in there, rather than playing Jenga with bags of salad and ready meals. You deserve food that is fresh. You deserve food that is in date. You deserve food that isn't going to make you ill. Tackle the gross stuff in the fridge. Idea number 4, if you've got a porch, spend a weekend on the porch. In the porch. As long as it takes, this may well be a full weekend task. It's an easy place for stuff to be plonked and never quite move again. Whether that's your mail, whether it's shopping bags, whether it's parcel packaging, anything like that. Arriving home and seeing a difference on the porch is a real boost to your mood. Number 5, under the kitchen sink. This is where a lot of people keep cleaning products, and I am no exception. And my under the sink cupboard is overflowing because I work under the misapprehension that buying cleaning products is the same thing as actually cleaning. I was like that at uni when I thought that if I bought the books for the course, that was almost the same as reading them. But I do tend to think that if I buy the latest sparkly cleaner, then that's as good as cleaning. So look at the cleaning products you've got under there and see what you can get rid of. Again, the things at the back may be the things that you're least fond of, in which case they will be easier to let go of than the stuff at the front that you might actually use. If you've got a choice of different bottles or different sprays, try to choose the ones that have multiple uses, rather than having one product for every separate type of surface or every separate room. If you can have like a multi-surface antibacterial spray that will do the job, try and use those as a reason to get rid of the more specific products. And when you're putting things back in there that you definitely need to keep, keep the stuff at the front that you're going to use more regularly and the stuff at the back that might only be occasional use. Because if your really useful stuff is at the back and you have to reach over, then things will get knocked over and it will end up chaos again quite quickly. Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. Number 6, magazines and newspapers. Now, this really, really varies depending on what you hoard. If you are somebody with rooms and rooms and rooms full of magazines and newspapers, then this is obviously not a weekend task. But if you have more of them than you need, but it's not a specific kind of compulsion for you, then magazines and newspapers can be a good thing to tackle because they take up space and they can often be easily recycled if that's something that concerns you. And so newspapers especially, ask yourself, once they're more than a week old, they're probably very irrelevant. So that can be a reasonably easy decision to make. Do I really need to know what The Guardian was talking about in November? Do I really need to remember the Independent's take on one of our many prime minister, one of our many recent prime ministers last July? It's, I don't. And, you know, the internet exists and all of that stuff is on there. Magazines may be a bit harder because they tend to be less topical, but magazines can be a good thing to set a time limit for, like, okay, I can keep this because I haven't read it, but if I haven't read it in the next week, then it has to go. And if you have read it, then it can go. And if you're keeping a magazine because there was a really good article in it, or if you're keeping a magazine because it mentioned a new herbal supplement that you want to try, then you can pull out that supplement ad, or you can pull out that article and get rid of the rest of the magazine. But setting a deadline for unread magazines can be a good way to prove to yourself whether you're really that interested or not. Because one argument is, if you've had it a while and haven't read it yet, are you really bothered about what's inside? So if you give yourself a 1 week deadline to read it, then at the end of the week, you can either say, well, I've read it now, that can go. Or you can say, I haven't read it, I'm clearly not bothered about it, so it can go. So that can be a good weekend task. Number 7, DVDs, VHS tapes, cassette tapes. First question, do you still even have ways to play them? I have CDs. I do still have a CD player, to be honest, although it hasn't been even plugged in for years. But I don't have a cassette player, I don't have a VHS player, and I don't even have a DVD player. And yet, I do still have DVDs, VHS tapes, and cassettes. And so, this is advice I need to take myself. And if you do have ways to play them, can you actually watch the same films online or listen to the same music online and get rid of the physical version and have that space back? And do you ever actually watch them or listen to them? Because, again, if you don't, you can benefit from that space far more than you can benefit from keeping it on the off chance that in 2027 you might want to rewatch But I'm a Cheerleader. No, that's a bad example because everybody should rewatch that regularly. But you know what I mean? If you've got old home movies and things on VHS tapes or even DVDs, there are services that can convert them to digital so that you can store them on your computer or on an external hard drive or in the cloud for years and years and years without you having to hold on to the physical tape itself. Number 8, pick a windowsill, any windowsill. Start at one end and work your way to the other end. Some people's windowsills are full of ornaments. Some are full of photos in frames. Some are full of anything and everything because it's a flat space that is just easy to put all sorts on. So as with all of these, this is another one that is going to vary according to not only your level of clutter, but the kind of things you keep and where you keep them. But try and be systematic. Start at one end and see if you can have it. If it doesn't have to be empty, but just make sure everything on there needs to be there, wants to be there, makes you happy, isn't covered in dust. See what that space can look like when it's less full. Number 9, your medicine cabinet, or wherever it is you keep medication, vitamin tablets, anything like that. The first thing to really be uncompromising on is expiry dates. If some medicine or supplements have expired, they have to go. I asked a pharmacist once what's the deal with out of date medication? And she said it can go one of three ways. One is it's absolutely fine. Two is it doesn't harm you, but it's not useful. The useful bit has expired. What it's meant to do, it doesn't do anymore. Or the third is that it becomes toxic and dangerous. And certainly as lay people, we just do not know which of those three it will be. If it's going to be fine but useless, there's no need to keep it. If it's going to be toxic, you definitely don't want to keep it. And you just don't want to take a risk in the hope that it is still effective. So if it's past its expiry date, get rid. You might want to contact a pharmacy to find out more about whether they kind of take expired medication back. I know a lot do, rather than putting it in the bin. But if you do this and you think, oh, the painkillers are out of date, but I need some painkillers in the house, then throw them away and write a list of the things you definitely need to replace. Some of those, you know, will be staples. You probably want some basic painkillers. You might want some, you know, basic heartburn medication, whatever, you know, your own situation is. If you've got kids, you might want some basic, I don't know, Veruca plasters or some Calpol or that kind of thing, hay fever tablets, whatever you definitely need. If they expire, write a list of the things you need to replace. And if something is close to its date, it's still in date, but it's going to go out of date within, you know, the next few months, put a sticker on it or a post-it note or write on the packaging so that you're aware that it's nearly past its best. Number 10 is things in your kitchen cupboards, your crockery and dishes and glasses and all that kind of thing that is cracked or chipped. When I was at school, we were taught that chips and cracks in crockery is like ideal breeding ground for germs. And I have not Googled whether that is still accurate or not, because if my home economics teacher was wrong, I almost don't want to know, because I find that quite a useful thing to visualize that helps me to get rid of cracked and chipped crockery. It makes sense to me that you know, it's a place that they can thrive because you can't really wash out the inside of a crack. So anything, and anyway, you deserve to eat off plates that are not damaged. You do. So any glasses, plates, anything like that with chips or cracks, go through your cupboards and get rid of them. Don't donate them. Just throw them away. Number 11, kids' toys that they definitely don't play with anymore. If you have children, you will know the kind of thing. If they are 7, they probably don't need their teething toys. If they're 15, they might no longer want Peppa Pig stuff. Get them excited about how much another child will love that thing. And I would say if that, I mean, I am not a parent, so I am loath to give any kind of parenting advice, but I would suggest don't do it behind their back if possible. You don't want to create in them a sense of trauma and loss that things just disappear. You might want to do it with them, as I said, kind of saying how exciting it is and how lovely it is that another kid will be able to play with them. But also, if your child lives in a hoarded house with you, you need to lead by example. They will feel that it is unfair that they have to get rid of things if you are not also getting rid of things. So do keep that in mind. Number 13, for your weekend de-hoarding projects. If you have bags that are ready to go, whether that's to the bin, to the recycling, to the tip, or to donate, get them out. Spend all weekend, if you have to, getting the stuff that you've already made decisions on out of the house and wherever they need to end up. Number 13, your coats. If you are in the Northern Hemisphere, it is spring and the perfect time to look at your winter coat situation. It's just been winter. Was there one coat you wore the whole time, ignoring 7 other winter coats that hang there taking up space? If so, you can get rid of the 7 you haven't worn. I realised in one of my putting like with like exercises recently that I have a ridiculous number of winter scarves, especially for somebody who very rarely wears winter scarves. So I've been putting quite a lot of winter scarves into the charity shop bag. If you are in the Southern Hemisphere and you are going into winter now, it's kind of autumn and you've had summer, look at your summer outer clothes. Depending on where you live, outer clothes may not be needed in the summer, but if so, then brilliant. This just isn't one for you. If you are somewhere where you might have light summer jackets, and again, you've only worn a couple of them, but you have a lot, use that as evidence to prove to yourself that you really don't need that orange one that you don't really like. Number 14, Tupperware. And I mean, Tupperware is a brand name, so I'm talking about any brand of plastic food storage stuff. I have a particular problem with any plastic food storage stuff that has a clippy top. If the top can clip on for some reason, I need it. But admit it, you've got loads. And it's a cliche, but it's true. The lids just don't all have matching bottoms. We know it's true. So my suggestion for how to deal with this is to grab as much of it as you can find and put it all in one place. Perhaps just get a big box. Don't buy one you've already got. Put all your plastic kitchen storage in the one place and start by identifying pieces that are clearly past their best that you wouldn't be keen to use. If something is stained, if it's cracked, if it's been in the dishwasher and got misshapen so the lid doesn't properly fit, if it's just the wrong size for anything that you realistically use, they are easy ones to get rid of. A next step is match lids with bases. Don't guess. Don't think that one looks like it fits on that. Stick a lid on every base. And that will take as long as it takes, depending on how many you've got. But once you are sure, once every lid has a base on it, none of this has to be done by eye. None of this should be done by like, oh, well, that lid would fit both of those, so I'll keep it all. No, no, no. Every lid has to be attached to a base. And whatever's left over, look at whether you can throw that away or whether you can recycle it. Number 15 is definitely one where I need to take my own advice. Mugs. How many mugs do you have? How many people live in your house? How many people visit? If there's one or two or four of you in the house and you may feasibly have four visitors over, then that would require 8 mugs in one go, like as in to be used at the same time. And then you might want a couple more in case one breaks. Do you need 26? Do you need 87? Do you need 112? Probably not. If, like me, you live on your own and I don't have visitors over for fairly obvious reasons, but, you know, I would like that to be possible again in the future. And I drink a lot of tea, so I certainly need more than one mug because I live on my own, but I do not need the number in my cupboard and scattered around the house, let's face it. If you're unsure where to start, often the ones right at the back of the cupboard are the ones you use the least. And you probably use them the least because you don't really like the design, or they're a bit too small or a bit too big, or they're a funny shape or whatever. And so that is a sign that they're not your favourites. They are probably the ones that can go. Number 16, and I got this idea from the Becoming Minimalist blog at becomingminimalist.com, and they call this the 12-12-12 challenge, where you have to find 12 items to throw away, 12 to donate, and 12 to be returned to their proper home. And you can do as many 12-12-12 challenges you like in one go or over the course of a weekend. And given that I'm talking about hoarding, that's just a general decluttering challenge, but given that I'm talking about hoarding, you might even be able to do a 12-12-12 challenge within a single category. For instance, books. Can you find 12 books to throw away because they're in really bad condition, 12 to donate because you've read them or you know you're not going to read them, and 12 to be returned to their proper home? Or could you do that with kitchen stuff or bedding? Number 17, your car, if you have one, obviously. If it's not super hoarded, if it's not packed to the rafters, but it is messy, this can be a great task for a weekend, especially as we're coming into nicer weather. So, like, my car is not super hoarded, but it is generally a bit messy. So for me, if I was doing this as a weekend task, I would be looking for things like empty water bottles, carrier bags. I would be looking for receipts, like petrol receipts, that kind of thing. Also, I quite often get a cup of tea at like a drive-through or somewhere, so empty tea lids and teacups, all of that can go. Or, you know, if there's something that doesn't necessarily have to go but is a bit messy, so maybe you have reusable shopping bags, they can go in the boot rather than just generally on the floor, that kind of thing. And if you're really feeling it, you can then hoover the entire thing. And as in vacuum for non-Brits, vacuum the entire thing and even wash the car. That would feel very functional to me. Number 18 is a slightly different way of approaching this. But if you live with other people and they have a particular spot in your home that is full of your stuff that they complain about, if they are always on at you, will you please sort out that particular spot? Treat them by sorting out that particular spot. You don't have to declare you're doing it. Don't make a big thing about it. Just spend a whole weekend, if necessary, sorting out that dining room table or wherever it is. You know you would make someone else's life easier, or you would make someone happier. I feel like that would be a really good thing to do. Number 19, pick a number. I'm going to suggest 100, but that may feel way too high for you, or it may feel way too low for you. So pick your own number. But whatever number you pick, that's how many things leave your house this weekend. Try to find a number that stretches you a bit, but isn't so far out of your comfort zone or so unrealistic that you give up before you've even started. A nice round number might help, which is why I went for 100 as opposed to 93. Or a number that's significant to you. If your favourite number is 7, you might want to do 77. But it's a kind of low-key goal that will help to push you a bit, but still gives you space to choose what goes and how that works. Number 20 of 23 ideas of de-hoarding tasks you can do in a weekend is stuff from a job you no longer do and are not planning to return to, especially if it's out of date. And even if you suddenly have a change of heart and do go back to that job, if it would be irrelevant now, it can definitely go. So if you used to be a maths teacher and you're now an accountant, you probably still need calculators, but you don't need textbooks on how to teach 7-year-olds subtraction. If you used to be a nurse and now you've retired, you don't need books on how to insert a cannula. That stuff, if it's still in date and relevant, could go to a charity shop. If it's books, it could go to a local library if they take donations. But if it's nursing practice from 40 years ago, it would bear no relation to what happens now and could probably go straight in the recycling. Idea number 21, pick a room and try to find all the things you have doubles of, or triples or quadruples. It's a way of putting like with like. And then once you've done that, see if you can pare down each set to just one of those things, or maybe two. How many potato peelers does one person really need? How many copies of that book? How many milk jugs? If you've got doubles, triples, quadruples, quintuples, sextuples, septuples, I'm going to stop there because I don't know. Question whether that's necessary in your life. Number 22, pet stuff. You might have had pets in the past and you don't now, or you have pets still, but there is a lot of stuff that you own that they are not interested in, or that is not suitable for them to use anymore. That stuff can go. If there are cat toys that your cat ignores, if there are rabbit toys that your rabbit is not interested in, if your fish swims round a particular castle but has a box of 12 other castles that are not in its tank, are they really necessary? That kind of thing can all go this weekend. And finally, and this is one that, as you know, again, I need to take my own advice, kitchen gadgets. It is time, I have to admit, for the bread maker to go. It's time for the juicer to go. It's time for all of those things that I bought 10 years ago, used obsessively for 4 months and have never touched since and are taking up valuable counter space. I know what I'm like. I should know better than to buy this stuff. Still resisting the air fryer, by the way, for those who are following that particular saga. But yeah, they take up a lot of space, these things. And when you're, if you genuinely use them, then that's great. Then they, you know, they may well be worth that space. But if you do not use them, they can go. You can put them on Facebook Marketplace. You can advertise them on Olio. I don't know whether that's international, but it's a place you can give away things and let somebody else bake bread obsessively for 4 months and then never do it again. Let it go. So those are my ideas, 23 weekend de-hoarding projects that are manageable and that will help you to make a chunk of progress in a way that when your general progress has to be measured in kind of bags out or time rather than somewhere where you can actually see a difference. These are the kind of tasks that give you a boost because you can see a tangible difference, and we need that periodically when we are undergoing such a vast process. Let's try something new. I've had an idea for a new segment for the podcast, and it involves you. Introducing listener voicemails. Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave me a brief recording to play on future podcast episodes. Let's have a go and see how it works. Let me know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail. So my top tip this week is from a person called Korook. I don't know how that's pronounced, but I will link to their TikTok account in the show notes at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. They're talking about their gender identity and trying to work out for themselves quite how that fits with them. But that aspect of things isn't so relevant as actually what they go on to say about that process, because they are talking about not having to get to a place of completion before speaking. And this is something I try to embody in the podcast. Sometimes I can record an episode and say, I did this and it worked. And I loved being able to do that. But other times, it's about the murky middle bit of the process. It's about saying, this is what I'm trying. This is how it's going. I think this is helping. And being able to speak without feeling like we have to have a neat ending that's all tied up nicely with string. Have a listen.
When you want to share, you're usually sharing something like, I finished this. Look at it. It's beautiful. I finished it. Look at it. And I'm definitely not anywhere near I finished it. A friend very recently said to me, it sounds like you're in the middle of a lot, and that is a really powerful place to share from. And so here I am, in the middle, sharing with you.
And I agree. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.